Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, The Films. We should have special music. Lady Macbeth and Beatrice at Dinner. Hi, David.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
I am all right. How are you?
Glad to hear it. I am doing just fine, thank you. Although the women that these movies are named after are not necessarily doing as well as you and I are.
Not so warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it's true. Although in other ways, they're very different kinds of movies, Lady Macbeth and Beatrice at Dinner. And one thing I just want to say at the outset, which is, so often, really, really often, really, really, really often, movies are longer than they really ought to be. And they run out of steam, and I think sometimes there's just this urge, well, you have to give the audience their money's worth. And, you know, it used to be back in bygone times in the 30s and 40s, you really often have films that would clock in at a little over an hour or an hour and a quarter, and they told their stories efficiently. Now, I love long movies. I've seen movies that are really, really long. I've sat through movies that are hours and hours and hours long. But there is something to be said for good, solid, efficient storytelling. And both of these movies clock in at one considerably under an hour and a half, the other one under an hour and a half, sort of a squeak under. And in both cases, they tell their stories with very little padding, and that is just refreshing to encounter. So getting to the substance of them a little bit, Lady Macbeth is not a Shakespeare movie. Although it has sort of a link to Shakespeare, it is actually based on a novella by a Russian writer named Nikolai Leskov. It was originally published in the great Fyodor Dostoevsky's magazine. Dostoevsky had a magazine for a while, and that is where Leskov's novella, which is called Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, was published. And some years later, in the 20th century, the great, my favorite 20th century composer, Dmitri Shostakovich, wrote an opera called Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District, based on the Leskov novella. And this film is also based very directly on the Leskov novella. And the main character, whose name is not Lady Macbeth, it is Catherine. And I'm now talking about the movie. I'll talk a little bit more about the novella that it's based on in a moment. It is updated, the novella, by quite a number of decades. And it takes place, I think it's supposed to be in Scotland. It was filmed mainly in the north of England. But I believe that we were supposed to be in Scotland, judging on the accents and so forth. And we have a young woman named Catherine, and at the very, very beginning of the film, and again, this is very efficiently told just through a handful of shots where we just see what's going on rather than hearing about it, she is getting married. She is getting married to a man named Alexander. And we very soon discover that Alexander is not a nice man. He is a real tyrant. They live way out in the countryside. He's got a sort of a farm out there, I guess it is, and he's got some workers who work for him, rough and rude men. And he expects her to stay indoors all the time and to sit with her prayer book. And he treats her absolutely miserably. He treats her in a very, very horrible way. So she has a servant who is a young woman named Anna, and that is pretty much the only person she can talk to. And at one point, her husband, Alexander, goes away for a while, and she is stuck in the house with her servant and her old grumpy father-in-law, who's even worse than the husband, very, very prissy, awful, strict man. And the idea is that this woman is basically treated like a sort of a slave. So, even though this takes place in England, there is a black woman who is a very major character named Anna, and she is the servant. And so we have Catherine alone in the house with her grumpy, awful, strict old father-in-law while her husband is away, and her black servant named Anna. And there are these rude and crude men who work around the place, and she strikes up a love affair with one of the men. His name is Sebastian. So this is what the basic story is. We have this woman who is having this love affair with this rude, crude workman, which is certainly the best thing in her life because everything else in her life is kind of rotten except for her friendship with her servant. So we know that this movie is, in fact, called Lady Macbeth. And so we suspect that maybe at some point our main character, Catherine, will induce someone to kill someone. And in fact, that is exactly what happens. And by the end of the film, we have had more than one murder, which has taken place either done by or caused by our main character, Catherine, who is the Lady Macbeth of the title. So it is a very, very dark movie. So that is what the film is. Now, what makes this movie worth watching? It is really quite a gripping drama. It is told in a very spare style. Again, I've mentioned that it's not terribly long. But it doesn't have many different settings either, and it doesn't have many characters, all of which makes it very concentrated, very intense, very dense even. Even though the storyline is fairly straightforward, very straightforward in fact, it has this sort of accumulative power that builds as the thing goes along. Of course, facilitated by very fine acting. Catherine Pugh plays Catherine, Cosmo Jarvis plays Sebastian, Paul Hilton plays Alexander, Naomi Aki is very, very good in the role of Anna, and there are some other characters who come in eventually, but those are the main characters. Now, going back to the novella that this is based on, the novella takes place around the time of the American Civil War, even though it is a Russian work of literature. It takes place around the time of the American Civil War, but there is no race element in it. That has been added by the makers of this movie. And it does kind of deepen the film because it reminds us that there was slavery in England, although it was abolished long before slavery was abolished in America. Still, by setting this movie in England, it reminds us of that. And it makes the race element that enters into it not sort of obligatory, as it would be in many American movies set around this period of time, but more just something that the movie is choosing to explore. I also want to mention that this film has been made into a movie more than once before, once in Russia, and once in a pretty good version from the early 1960s by one of the greatest of all Polish directors, Andrzej Wajda, who made a Yugoslavian production, carries more of the title of the original novella. It's called Siberian Lady Macbeth. And I will mention also at the end of the novella and at the end of that Andrzej Wajda film, the characters are all, some of the characters are schlepped off to Siberia because they're caught for their misdeeds. That does not happen. Nothing like that happens at the end of our Lady Macbeth film, which has a different ending, which is equally dark, but it's not involve quite the same meeting out of punishments to various people. So the main thing I want to do is to highly recommend Lady Macbeth, and also if anyone has the leisure and the energy and the interest, by all means, read the Leskov novella. It's a very fine, again, very dense, very concentrated, very focused piece of work. Lady Macbeth rings enough changes on it to make it quite different, but it's quite a fascinating movie, distinguished primarily by its very efficient storytelling and by its very, very good acting. It is, by the way, the first film directed by William Oldroyd, written by Alice Birch, both in their first feature, and they both really know what they're doing, and I hope we see plenty more work from them in time to come. Our other film for today, Beatriz at Dinner, is a little bit closer to home. It is an American movie, and it takes place in California. And it is directed by Miguel Arteta and written by Mike White. And many a long year ago, they collaborated on a very, very good, lovely little independent film called Chuck and Buck. Beatrice at Dinner is different in a lot of ways, but it still shows that these two, director Miguel Arteta, writer Mike White, have a very, very strong chemistry. Mike White is also a very good actor. He's not in this movie, but it's quite a fascinating film in a lot of ways. So Beatrice at Dinner, the main character is, you guessed it, her name is Beatrice, and she is played by Salma Hayek, a very, very gifted actor, as we all know. And she plays a woman who's kind of low down on the socioeconomic scale. She's a sort of she works in a healing center. Actually, looks more like a real hospital than sort of a new age little place. But she herself does sort of new age healing, laying out of hands and sort of, talking a lot of sort of mindfulness talk and those sort of thing. If I sound a little skeptical, it's because this is not an area of medicine that I particularly go in for. But that is what she does. And she is very sincere about it. And she appears to be very good at it. And she has a kind of a tough life. Obviously, she doesn't have a lot of money. She is a single mother. And someone some neighbor who didn't like the noise made by a goat that she has and that she dearly beloves. Someone has poisoned her goat. So this is not a good time for Beatrice. She is not happy. So she goes off to visit one of her clients who she gives at-home treatments to. There are some doctors, it turned out, who still make house calls, and she's a doctor of sorts. And she is at the home of this very well-to-do woman giving her a treatment. And then she gets out to drive home, and her car has broken down. And it's going to be quite a long time before she can get a friend to come and fetch her and help to get the car fixed and all of that. So her hostess, the woman who owns this very wealthy house, whose name is Kathy, is preparing for a dinner party. So there we have the other part of our title, Beatrice at Dinner. And she is a very nice woman, but she is, and she immediately offers Beatrice, stay with us. You can stay with us tonight. You can stay, wait around for your friend to come as long as you want. Make yourself comfortable. In fact, why don't you join us at our dinner party? Well, Beatrice is reluctant, but finally she does accept. And so we are now going to have Beatrice, who, even though she is a healer, has pretty much the status of a servant, pretty obviously in this wealthy household. And by the way, Kathy's husband, whose name is Grant, is not at all happy to have this woman, who in his eyes is very much a servant, staying for dinner with him and his business partners. But that's the way things are going to work out. And that is what the movie is mostly about. It takes a while before the dinner party actually gets started. But we have this wealthy couple, Kathy and Grant, and some business acquaintances, business partners, who are all coming for dinner, and they're going to talk their rich people talk, and they're going to talk about their business deals, and they're going to talk about this and that. And then we have this very working class single mother who has joined them for dinner. And that is, of course, Beatrice, who is our main character, although these others are very important as well. And what happens is that the dinner does not go tremendously well. And it is partly Beatrice's own fault, because she is ill at ease and is not all that pleased about all this. There's a lot of bad stuff going on in her life, up to including her car having broken down and other stuff too. And now she is stuck with these people with whom she has very little in common. But she really tries to be sociable, and they condescend as well as they're able, which varies from person to person. But also, as I said, it's partly Beatrice's fault. Because she is ill at ease, she drinks a bit much. She drinks a bit more wine than she really ought to, and she starts saying them things which are not very politic. Sometimes she is just making conversation and saying things the others aren't quite sure how to respond to. And sometimes she says things that really are obviously going in wrong directions and are not making the atmosphere of the party any nicer. Now, it doesn't help that even the host who has invited her, Kathy, is still pretty condescending toward her, obviously really likes her, feels a lot of sympathy for her and empathy with her, but is basically condescending toward her. Her husband, Grant, is not much good at all. And the guests are not the best people to have dinner with a working class companion who they don't know very well. The most memorable among them are a guy named Doug Strutt, great name, borrowed, by the way, I think from Alfred Hitchcock's great film, Marnie, played by John Lithgow, and a woman named Shannon, played by Chloe Sevigny. So we have this dinner getting worse and worse as it goes along, even though Beatrice really does know how to be a social person. And it's not all her fault for drinking too much. She's not exactly falling down drunk. And the other guests and her hosts are not helping to make her more comfortable as time goes on. And what mainly happens, and what makes all this movie more than just a little comedy drama of embarrassment, is that class issues are very much at stake. The huge gaps between the people who seem to have, well, not everything, but an awful lot, and the people who seem to have, well, not nothing, but a whole lot less than maybe they ought to have in a society which is very rich and prides itself on its great democratic principles. So all of these things come to the fore as the movie goes along, and the movie gets more and more interesting as these things are explored in different ways. I will say that shortly before the end of the movie, it makes a huge U-turn almost into melodrama. And I said, wait a minute now, hold the phone. This is not where this movie ought to be going. And then it takes a huge step back away from this over-the-top melodrama. And then it sort of takes a little step in that direction again, and then the movie sort of ends. So an interesting bunch of sort of twists and turns just before the end, which were not my favorite parts of the movie. But still, interesting stuff. Mainly, the movie is distinguished by wonderful acting by Salma Hayek, Chloe Sevigny, John Lithgow, David Warshawski as the host, and others. Wonderful beautifully acted movie, with a special kudos to John Lithgow, a fabulous actor who is just at his absolute best in this movie. So a couple of movies about women, which itself is very, very refreshing. Not very happy movies, but very interesting movies, and I'm really glad to report that they're out there and well worth seeing. And that is my somewhat woman-centered story this week, Joe.